Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. We are so happy to be back with you again. Now, as many of you know, we've been on sabbatical for the last year or so, and since we've been away, so much has happened. At any rate, we're getting ready to get started. So today's topics include the Affordable Care Act. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll have a candid conversation about the actual website versus the actual the Affordable Care Act itself. We also take a look at Trey Reddell, cocaine possession, and a couple of other things are happening in the drug area with our elected officials. We also talk a little bit about scandal and the best man holiday and much, much more. So let's get started. Now, I want to get to the Affordable Care Act, and we will do that momentarily, but let's pause for a minute to discuss these new developments coming out of Washington, and specifically the Iran deal. Now, quite naturally, there are separate and opposing viewpoints on the deal. Like, this is news when it comes to anything that the president does. But first, let's take a look at the story. Now, in a report, I don't know if you've heard this or because it was pretty much breaking news. It came on last night. It interrupted some of the shows right about 9 central or so last night. And there was a report posted by NPR. And the writer contends that this era marks the first time in a while that something tangible is coming out of the Washington regarding the Iran nuclear agreement. If by now you haven't heard the particulars, on yesterday, November 23rd, President Obama announced that Iran and the world leaders had reached an agreement to curtail Iran's nuclear program, at least for an abbreviated period of time, up to 6 months, while the two sides work out a more comprehensive solution. Now, CNN has reported the world leaders involved what they call the P5+1 group. This is the United States, the U.K., France, Russia, China, and the plus one is being Germany. And of course, Iran is involved in this particular agreement, if you will. Now, there's some good information posted out there on CNN about what the specifics are regarding the agreement, but it befuddles me to when you're looking at something of this significance that, as I stated earlier, separate and opposing viewpoints regarding this issue. Now, some chalk this up to be a distraction to the issue regarding health care, and others consider this to be a real step forward. So I want you to get you to weigh in. So to my question that I pose to the listening audience out there is, what do you think? Is this a smokescreen for Obamacare, or is it a significant step forward in Middle East peace? To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, the phone lines are open, but before we take some calls, I'd like to introduce the executive producer of Current Events and, of course, the chief operating officer for Cook Enterprises. I introduce to some and present to other, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So right off the bat, let's talk a little bit about Iran and this agreement that or this deal that President Obama and including the P5+1 has reached, at least for the next 6 months, with the intent of creating a better deal over this period of time. So my question is to you, is this a smokescreen, as some suggest, or is this a significant step forward in the Middle East peace process?
Well, before I answer that question, I do have to say that in following along with your statement earlier about this being our first time back in almost a year, or probably a little bit over a year, I have to say that today is a moment of reflection for me. One of the some may know that I lost one of my brothers recently, Don, and one of our last conversations was when the show was coming back on. And he always called and listened in or would tell somebody about the show. So for me personally, I'm dedicating today's show to my brother, because if he was still here, he would be listening in to us right now. And so this show is dedicated to you, Don. In answering your question, no, this is not a smokescreen. This president can do 12 things at once, and we not know about any of them, because that's just kind of how he operates. So he recognizes that the longevity and his legacy is hinged on both of these things, in terms of the Affordable Care Act, as well as being able to broker a deal to do something that no one has been able to do in decades. And this goes back to the most previous two presidents. So he has done yet again what no other president had been able to do prior to him in both of these things, with the Affordable Care Act and with brokering of this deal thus far with Iran. We're closer now than where we've ever been before, and it seems to be something that is doable. And I think the contingencies that have been put in place to monitor and to ensure that they will keep up their end of the bargain, I think, is a great place to start. Having watched this president over the last 5.5 years, 6 years, you tend to know that he doesn't sign his name to something that he doesn't firmly believe in. And so I believe he feels strongly that they've made the best inroads they could possibly make, and that we will hold up our end of the bargain and do what we say we're going to do if they don't do what they're going to do. So there's, you know, there's contingency on both ends to follow through and to make sure that this deal gets done, and that all parties involved walk away feeling like, you know, they've accomplished something. So I feel, you know, pretty confident that the president is taking care of business, regardless of what's happened here domestically. because being the president of the United States puts you in a position of power around the world. And so he doesn't have the luxury to just be concerned about the meanderings of his, you know, rival political party here, because so many people in the world globally look to him for leadership and direction. And so he has to be able to do both. He has to do and not just either or. He has to do and both.
You know, I want to poke at this thing about the statement that you made about no one has done this before. You mentioned healthcare as well as this Iran nuclear deal. And the fact that people are poking at the president because of these accomplishments. What's driving the rhetoric around the negativity associated with these things that you mentioned that hasn't been done before, but he's made significant strides forward in creating a health care for all, and now looks like a nuclear arms deal with the Middle East that could potentially be groundbreaking with respect to where we move forward. What's going on with this rhetoric around the negativity associated with his accomplishments?
Well, it's interesting that you do use the word respect, because there hasn't been any respect for this man or respect for the office since he was elected in November of 2008. And although people don't like to talk about it, it's the elephant in the room, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. But there has been. We can say that people tease Bush and talk about Bush or made caricatures of Bush. We can say that, but it was never to the level of hate. It was, and you didn't have groups of people doing some of the things that has been done to this president. So the fact that he has been disrespected, the office has been disrespected since his election, the first go-around, speaks to where people's mindset is as it relates to him as the man in the office. I value conversation with people when we're talking about policy that he has done that you may disagree with. I value that conversation. I have a difficult time when the things you talk about are not about policy. It's about your opinion about the policy. And so when you can talk to me in substantive manner about what is wrong with something or if there is a better way to do it, then fine. But just to be for a congressman, a sitting senator from the great state of Texas that we both reside in, to get on Twitter last night and make the statement that this was that the Iran deal was a distraction from Obamacare. Seriously, you really think that the president is doing things to distract us from a website? Because we're talking about a website. Because a lot of things in the Affordable Health Care Act have already been in place. Almost for this full year, I personally have received benefits, Affordable Care Act. So there's no distraction there. And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but I think it's just a matter of total disrespect of the man and his vision and the fact that he can walk and chew gum and the fact that he can broker deals across the nation. We're not just talking about across the aisle. We're talking about across nations with different types of people who have their own interests that they are fighting for. And to be able to send John Kerry, and let's not, you know, not give John Kerry his props, you know, to be able to send John Kerry to be your mouthpiece in these deals and to make these things happen speaks volumes to this man's leadership ability. And so, yes, the reason why they can't handle, they can't find it in themselves to acknowledge when he's done well is because of the deep-seated hate, and I'll say it, the deep-seated just flat-out disrespect they have for him as a man, simply because I feel, based on the level that it has been, has a lot more to do with the color of his skin, has a lot more to do with his background, has a lot more to do with his heritage than has anything to do with his policy. That's my belief, and I stand on that. because no other time has there been such contempt for the office, not just the man, but the office of the presidency as what we've seen now. And we all know what Bush did. But even when they finally admitted that he lied, no one ever stood up at the State of the Union and said he lied. Not one. And we knew he did.
Okay. I mean, that's a pretty profound statement that you made there regarding the president's background, culture, race, and things of that nature. So it sounds like the general suggestion that you're making is the fact that the race of the man is trumped when it comes to the state of the union. So race basically trumps the state of the union.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So let me
let's flesh that out though. Let's flesh that out. So you're looking at whether or not race flush, you know, trumps that. And my answer, the short answer, is yes. And here's why. When you look at the fact that this Congress has not passed any major legislation since 2010, they ran on jobs, and in spite of what they've done, we are still climbing out of a dangerous hole that we could easily fall back into at any moment. But in spite of, they've not done one jobs bill. They haven't done anything on immigration. Everything that they said they were going to do, I mean, they ran on jobs. And we still ain't seen them. And everything that he's tried to do to put that back in the forefront, they've maligned it with what's happening in the Senate, and we'll probably talk about that too with the Senate rules and the filibustering, and not having judges in place, where you have judicial nominees that have been placed on. Here's how crazy this is. We are filling for a judicial position in the District of Columbia that was vacated by Supreme Court Justice John Roberts. That's how long we've been without a judge in that district on a federal level, going back to John Roberts. John Roberts was appointed by George W., if I'm correct. So we have not filled, and this is crazy. So those sorts of things, and then when you look at the things they have passed in Congress that have been a detriment to people, when you have poor people who now have to do even more with less because you're cutting subsidies to those that need it most, the most vulnerable, but yet you're giving subsidies to those that really don't need it, the businesses, the corporations. And yet Head Start has to turn away children because the funding isn't there. And so when you say it's been to the detriment that it trumps, that race trumps the State of the Union, the short answer is yes, and here's the evidence. So I'm not just speaking out of passion, although I have lots of passion about it. Not only am I speaking out of emotion, because I have a lot of emotion attached to it, because I see the fallout behind it personally. So, yes, and here is the evidence to prove that if it is not race that has caused this Congress, these groups of people to obstruct him at every turn, if it was not race, then I need you to tell me what it is. I need to know what it is, because it can't be the made-up stuff that we hear about, because he's no more socialist or whatever the other big term that half of America don't even know what it means. It just sounds evil, so we think it is, not realizing that most of us benefit from a lot of these quote-unquote socialist programs but don't even realize it. So Well, what else is it?
Okay, so
yeah,
here's the problem.
I can say emphatically, yes.
Okay, so here's the problem that I have. And it is doesn't negate what you're saying, but I just do have a question about what you're saying. And you use this term, we have not filled. And I like that because you're really talking about we as being we the people. And so when you look at this form of government that we have, i.e. a democracy, and I'm using the term democracy as a form of government in which all eligible citizens participate equally, then the people, we the people, are electing the officials that are conducting these atrocities. So when you look at the whole grand scheme of things, then if it is the people that are electing the officials, and the officials are making the passing the legislation or not passing the legislation to the benefits that you mentioned, i.e. Head Start and things of that nature, then it seems to me that one can conclude is that the majority of the people are not concerned with these issues that you mentioned. Because if the majority of the people in this democracy was concerned, then the majority of the people would elect the right people and put them in office so they can make this change. So although it is very true that, you know, that businesses and corporations are benefiting from the current people in Congress, it also true is that the people put them there. And so it must be true then that the people are happy with the outcomes because they're not doing anything to get them out.
Okay, here's what I have to say to that. I would say that I agree with you on like a small scale. And that I would also say that the majority of people, we the people, have limited knowledge on what really happens in government. I would say that this president, in his presidency, a byproduct of it has been the civics lesson that we've all been taught, because we couldn't understand, well, this is normal. Why are we fighting about raising the budget limit? That's always happened. So now we're getting civics lessons. Now we're getting some understanding about what's happening that has always happened, and now that is not, we're questioning the process. Now all of a sudden you hear people saying, well, why is the office of the presidency term limit, but Congress people can be there for 100 years? People are now realizing, dang, they have been there my whole life and ain't done nothing. Why are we still voting for these people? And I'm not seeing any difference in my neighborhood. So have been lulled into a false sense of complacency, and they have found themselves awakened to find that things really have not been run as smoothly as we thought. And I probably need to be a little bit more involved in what's happening, because I didn't know that John Roberts' position that he left had to at least been, so the president been in there since 08, 09. He was Supreme Court when the president was elected. So we're at least talking 07, maybe even 08, that John Roberts' position, judge position was vacated at least 06, 07, 2013, almost 2014. That's a long time. And that's an issue on who was ever in charge. When Bush left, when Bush was there after he nominated him and he went to the Supreme Court, and this whole time since President Obama's been in there, that's a problem. And you can't tell me, and the politics of it is that seat, that area is where a lot of your Supreme Court justices come from. And so the politics of it is, well, they don't want to fill it. They don't want to give President Obama too many positions over there because they'll be more liberal, and then eventually the Supreme Court would be more liberal. Whatever. But I don't feel that we collectively as a body of people, as the we the people, have been as in tune as we needed to be into what's going on in America in terms of how policies are done. I mean, we talked about this, you know, before about going back to the Schoolhouse Rock and really getting people to pay attention, because for a long time, you know, we wasn't really paying attention to how a bill becomes a law, how long, how things are processed through the system. And so we've been asleep. And so, yes, we have some responsibility in that, and that now that we are awake, there was some opportunity in 2012 to get rid of some of those people. Yes, it was. And for some reason, some people in those districts, which those districts are safe because, you know, they think like that person thinks. So they've been able to create a system that for some of them, they'll always get reelected. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I mean, when you look at the fact that I'm gonna go back to this whole notion of we the people, because I'm a strong believer in taking action. You know, I've seen people talk a lot about the problem. I've seen people write a lot about the problem. As one preacher said, we've gotten really creative. We've gotten really creative about talking about how the house is burning down, but we're not running in and trying to save anybody to get out the house while it's burning down. And I want to go back to this thing about limited knowledge and the civics lesson that you talked about. And because it wasn't too long ago when we, and I'm going to say African-Americans, had a lot of legislative victories, you know, starting with the Voting Rights Act, starting with when you look at affirmative action. There's a lot of different legislative accomplishments that the African-American community has gained over the years, and they were really actively involved. But now it seems to be is that they're on the other end of the other spectrum, and now because of their lack of engagement, or the people's lack, and not just African American, but the people's lack of engagement in politics, all of these things are now happening. You're seeing more of Republicans getting away with, you know, cutting Head Start, cutting food stamps. You're getting more. Legislators getting away with changing voting rights, because the people, in the event that the majority of the people felt a certain way, then it should take the majority of the people to get the people in the right office to make those decisions. So when I find these things happening with Head Start being cut, with food stamps being cut, with Voting Rights Acts being changed, then it must be the democracy taking place. That means that must be that the people are okay with it because they're putting the people in office. So I want to take a break here, and when I return, I want to take your calls. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. When we return, we're going to be talking about Obamacare. We want to have a candid conversation about the Affordable Care Act. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jema. And Ask Jema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift focus now to the main topic we wanted to discuss today. That is the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. Now, just to kind of catch you up, on March 23rd, 2010, President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act. The law puts in place comprehensive health insurance reforms that will roll out over the next 4 years and beyond. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the specifics of the Affordable Care Act. First, I want to point out a few items about the law, and then let's talk about the perceived problems with the actual law. And let's see if there's a big disconnect or not. Maybe there's not. Maybe there is one. But let's take a look. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act and how it's affecting African Americans, this specifically. Now, it will help make health insurance coverage affordable and accessible for millions of Americans. But for African Americans, like other racial and ethnic minorities, the law will address inequities and will increase access to quality, affordable health coverage, invest in prevention and wellness, and give individuals and families more control over their care. Now, already, the Affordable Care Act has been benefited the nearly 85% of Americans who have already have insurance. 3.1 million adults have gained coverage through their parents' plan. 6.6 million seniors are paying less for prescription drugs. 105 million Americans are paying less for preventive care and no longer face lifetime coverage limits. 13.1 million of Americans have received rebates. 17 million children with pre-existing condition no longer deny coverage. Now, beginning next year, the Affordable Care Act will provide 6.8 million uninsured African Americans an opportunity to get affordable health insurance coverage. Wow. Jema, let's talk about this for a minute. All of those facts, and now yet and still we are having so much vitriol directed towards the president because of this website is not registering people in an acceptable amount of time. Well, how is it that we can't separate the problem with the website juxtaposed to the actual law itself? What's going on here?
Because that's too easy. I mean, it's too way too easy to do that. I mean, to separate it. because it really, it has been comical over the last 30 days watching the media, both on the left and the right, create this hysteria around the website for people trying to sign up when anybody who has ever signed up for insurance on their job know you get a 30-day window at your job, and 9 times out of 10, you don't really pay attention until the week before your deadline. That's just who we are. I mean, that's just the nature of human beings. We are procrastinators, and we wait till the last minute. So why would we think this would be any different when you're talking about making sure that you have to go online and then you have to go through this, check out the exchanges and see what's out there and compare and you know, really, you know, if you don't have any insurance as of today, signing up tomorrow is still not going to get your insurance because it don't kick in until January. So the coverage still doesn't start till January. So all of this nonsense about people coverage being dropped right now, the coverage they had to the end of the year, they still have it. It's just come January they won't have that coverage and they'll need to get something different. So it's not the website, because the law is doing exactly what you said it is doing. The problem is it is working, and that many more people do have coverage. And that is never what the Republican Party wanted. They never wanted to have health coverage for people. Because if they did, Patrick, then we would hear more about what their plan is for health care. And they don't have one. They just don't want what we have, but they don't have an idea for anything new. Although what we have came out of their original playbook. This is their brilliant idea. So we go back to your original question at the top of the show about does race trump what's good for the State of the Union? And that answer is yes. Still, even when you're looking at health care, when you're talking about covering 30-some-odd more million people and allowing people to have better services. So you have something now, but you can get something at either the same rate or a cheaper rate, and it's going to give you better coverage. I think I'd sign up for that. And even when, you know, when we looked at our plan, anybody should know, that this law was not really for a certain class of people. It was for a certain class of people. It was for the low middle to low income. It was never for the high to upper middle income people or the millionaire, the upper income. It was never for them. So I don't even know why they keep getting in the conversation, because it was never for them. And they're the ones that's on TV making all the noise, confusing the people who really need it. They're the ones that's causing all the conflict, and they don't even, they're the ones jamming up the website, and they don't even need to be on the website. Why are you checking the website when you don't need the coverage?
Yeah. So I want to talk about two of the comments. First being, why is this any different than you would do if you're signing up for your own web? I think that's a very good and interesting point to kind of hammer home, because really you mentioned that the Affordable Care Act is to make healthcare affordable for those that are not being covered today, not to bring in these people that have coverage and bring them to the pool, but it gives them an option. Mm-hmm. What that does, though, and I think is what people are really missing out of the whole conversation about healthcare, is what this does is it still is true that there's still a limited amount of people that are providing insurance. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if we got 50,000 more companies entering the market. No, that's not the case. It's the case that because you have a more people entering the pool, it becomes a matter of supply and demand. You got more supply, it should lower the cost,
mm-hmm.
because you have more people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the real benefit is really to get those people that are not insured into the system, because it reduces the cost of those that are paying for them being serviced anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the real goal is to defray the cost for the people that are already paying it, right? So if you're paying, you know, $500, $600 a month for insurance coverage, just for an example, then your premium, it is safe to assume that your premiums should go down, because you're no longer having to pay for those people that are not in the system, because they will now be in the system. And so that's a very important thing to note, because people get sick. It's just the nature of the being, right? Things will happen. Some of these things will happen because of your behavior. Some of these things will happen because of accidents. But things will happen. So because of that, this is the real objective of the Affordable Care Act. The other thing is that I want to kind of poke at this thing a little bit is the fact that we know all of these good things are happening, and I'm gonna talk to some of them. But the problem that I have is that advocates for the Affordable Care Act are not getting their message out. They're not controlling the narrative, right? And so that becomes a real problem for the masses, because they don't know who to believe, because the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And right now, when you're talking about what's happening now, 7.3 million African Americans with private insurers now have access to expanded preventive services. It's estimated that 5.1 million African American women with private health insurance now have guaranteed access to women's preventive services. And there goes and the statistics go on and on and on and on, but yet that is not a part of the narrative. The narrative is now the website. Everybody is caught up on the website. And so you can't really get to the facts. You can't really get to the fact that it is helping people, getting people into the system, because we're spending too much time talking about the website. Why is it that we can't control the narrative?
Just for the same reason that we can't control not only the narrative, but even when we're there, we have allowed the media to put this law into a box. And before the website, you wasn't getting any talk about the benefits then either. You got to remember, this thing started kicking in 2012. So even when he was running for re-election, there was already some things that was taking place. 2013, a lot of things started taking place. So they had up until the rollout of the website to talk about it. But then you were dealing with the budget. Then you were dealing with all these domestic issues. And then you were dealing with, you know, foreign stuff and whether or not this was going to, you know, what was going on in Syria. And then you got the pirates. And so you never got the opportunity to talk about what the benefits that were already kicked in and spend some lengthy time discussing. I mean, we hear about kids being able to stay on their parents, and we hear about, then you remember the big debate over birth control and whether or not that hospitals, Catholic hospitals, we should have to pay for that and all of that stuff. I mean, that message got muddled because we didn't get in front of it. We, as in people that support the law, we never get in front of it. We're always coming playing from behind. And when you play from behind all the time, you know, at some point the clock's going to run out on you.
Yeah.
And so it should not be up to the president to be the one to come out and give the narrative, because a lot of those Democrats that were reelected in 2012 ran on health care. Where are they? A lot of those in the House and the Senate. And so they are running scared because they fear what might happen as opposed to celebrating what has already happened. And that's what I have a problem with. They don't have a backbone to me. They as in the elected officials, and even the media, because you get Chuck Todd that gets to come on TV and say it's not his job to tell officials that they're not telling the truth about the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. Well, Chuck Todd, if it's not your job as a person in the media, then how am I going to know? If you don't point it out and you have a TV show that's on every day, how am I going to know?
Yeah, if you're not there telling. You want to keep you ignorant. And so the other thing that is interesting about this is that there has been so much effort spent on attaching this law to the president as opposed to attaching this law to the United States. It is law. We all should follow
right.
it. We all should either do one or two things. One, we should work to improve it, or we should work to follow it, not to tear it down. And it, now, granted, there are laws that have been in the book in the past. If you don't like them, you do something about them. But just to sit and talk about tearing the law down or tying the law to an individual or doing all these things is, to me, is nonsense. And it's really just a lot of theater put on by the people in our elected officials, which is, to me, is very disappointing. It's very disappointing to see that our congressmen and women, as well as our senators, act in this manner when we're really supposed to be about governing the United States, really supposed to be about moving the country forward. You know, and it's hard for me as a citizen to sit and look at our elected officials and have any respect for the office anymore. You know, and it's hard for me to understand what their sole purpose is anymore. You know, they're not passing legislation. They're not trying to make the bills that we do have or the laws that we do have any better. And they're about disrespecting the office of the White House, office of the presidency. And they're about cutting services for people that are in need. So when I look at the grand scheme of things, I don't see any benefit for having them in there.
I agree. And yet, you know, we say that we are a nation that's built on Christian principles. And we are supposed to have morals and values, and that we spent all this time trying to go in other nations and compel them to think like we think as it relates to having a belief in the faith in God or whatever, and yet we treat people like we treat them. That is unacceptable, because either you believe in the things you talk about or you don't. And so it's perplexing to me that for the party, and I speak directly now about Republicans and conservatives, for a party that bases a lot of its strong moral conviction and its biblical teachings and all of this, and yet the part of the Bible that talks about care of the least of these and the children, the widow, and the poor, that is not what they're doing. As a matter of fact, they're doing the opposite of that. They're not taking care of the least of these. And so I know the counter to that is, well, the scripture says if you don't work, you don't eat. I understand that. But my, you know, if I got a 2-year-old, that 2-year-old can't work. So punishing me as an adult, because maybe, you know, the job, I might be working 2-3 jobs. And it's still barely enough to cover, because nobody wants to pay a livable wage anymore. You got Walmart having food drives for its own employees. And Walmart is one of the biggest corporations in the world. And you telling me, Walmart, that you don't make enough to pay your employees a better wage, where you don't have to have a food drive for the people that work for you? That's ridiculous. But this is where we live now. This is the country that we've become. And for some, that's okay. Well, I'm like you. I have a problem with that. I don't know how we got here. I just hope that at some point that we wake up sooner rather than later, and that it shouldn't take all of this to get something so simple done. I mean, when we're talking about if you take care of people on the front end, then you know how to take care of them on the back end. It's the same conversation we have around education. It costs more to incarcerate than it does to educate. But we spend more incarcerating children and adults than we do in educating them. If we put that same money that we spend per child per day in a locked facility, that we would put per child per day in a public school, what you say? We wouldn't have to worry about being at the bottom because we would have all the resources we need. The kids would be getting all the tools they need to be successful. But we've gotten it all backwards because there's no profit in that. The profit isn't in locking them up. So those that have the purse string, that's what they want to do. They want to lock them up.
So when,
they get
when
more
are,
money that way.
So when are the people, though, are going to finally stand up for themselves and say enough is enough, right? I mean, the corporations as well as our elected officials are only going to do as much as we will allow them to do to us. You know, when you talk about Walmart and you talk about the fact that they're having food drives for their own employees, then that means that the people that shop there, the people that work there, need to take a stand. And if you don't take a stand, they're going to allow it to continue to happen. When you talk about the elected officials not passing laws that are going to support Head Start, not passing laws that are going to support people that are in need, then we need to get rid of them, right? So there's a certain level of responsibility that the people have that we're not taking. What's wrong with what we're doing and allowing these corporations, allowing these elected officials to continue to treat us in this manner? That hasn't been the case. We don't have a history of that. When you look at the civil rights movement, when you look at everything that happened back then, they had people to stand up for what they thought was right. Now, it wasn't an easy walk in the park, but people took a stand. You know, they were united in a particular cause. That doesn't mean everybody has to agree. That doesn't mean everybody has to say that they want to do this. But there was a cause that people says, okay, yeah, this is the big picture. We want to take a stand on this big picture. Let's take some action. Now, it seems to me that most people are sitting back in their houses, in their apartments, on Twitter and on Facebook, and they're saying things, but they're not doing things. So what happened? What happened when you look at then to what's happening now, Gina?
Well, you have two just various degrees of this conversation that we're having. On the one hand, you have a group of people who have been direct beneficiaries of a lot of things that the government has put in place that they probably don't even know that they're the direct beneficiary of. So they don't even know they are being helped by the government to sustain themselves. They just think because of who they are or whatever that, you know, they're entitled to it. So you have that group of people. Then you move on to another side, and you have a group of people who's like, well, I made it, and that really doesn't affect me, so I'm not that concerned about it. Okay, so they don't realize that not being concerned about it, because you may not be affected by it now, they don't realize how you may be affected by it later. So you live out in the suburbs and your school might be a little better. You're not concerned about the school down where you grew up in, not having the same sort of opportunities there as your school does. And so you don't realize that on the back end of that, you're going to pay for that because of when they close that school, those children have to go somewhere. And so now your school that had 15, 20 students in it may now have 30. And believe you me, 10 more kids in a classroom is significant when you don't have any more additional resources. So we're not paying attention. And then the other thing is we had a collective argument into what our desires were. We didn't necessarily agree on how to get there, but we knew we wanted to vote. We knew we wanted to have equal accession. We knew we wanted to be able to for women to be recognized as women and have the same pay opportunities as men. So we had those things. Whereas you look at us now, when we achieve those things, now we, if you were to ask 10 black people, 10 Latinos, 10 white people, what is the biggest, you know, thing in your community, they're not going to be able to tell you one. They will give you 10 different things. And those 10 different things, you might get a cross-pollination of two. But for the most part, it's my world, it's my lane, that's all I'm concerned about. And if that's the way we think, then we won't get back to those times where we truly cared about our brother and being our brother's keeper. See, that's also scripture. So that's why I'm always perplexed and confused and somewhat angry at us as a nation, because we spew all these scriptures when it's convenient and when it fits our purpose. But when you really study that scripture about what it means, then we should be doing more, not less, for people. And therein, that's it. I mean, it's real simple.
So have we reached a state in our society that we've arrived and we no longer have those Christian values that this country was built upon, you know, to each his own, you know. I'm not my brother's keeper, basically, is what I'm hearing, and not necessarily what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing people do in across the nation. I mean, the times where we would go out and help each other and do things with each other, it don't necessarily have to be for each other. What about with each other? I'm not seeing it anymore. And people are in their own lanes and not being able to get together and do things.
Right. And because people are in their own lanes, when we get to the part of the country in the world where we are now and we look up and we're trying to figure out, well, how did we get here? Well, what do you mean these positions haven't been filled? Well, what do you mean all this? Why hasn't Congress passed something to do with jobs? And why are they fighting? Because we've been buried in the sand somewhere, sleep in a coma forever, collectively, that we're just not realizing how jacked up things really are. And unfortunately, it couldn't have come, and it hit us when the economy hit the bottom. When everybody started hurting, then all of a sudden people want to pay attention to what's going on. When it was just those people, when it was just the poor people, when it was just the black people that were hurting, that were disenfranchised, that's okay. But now all of a sudden you messing with the white people's money, now we need to figure out how to fix it. The system's been broke for a long time. And we can play like it hasn't, but we, you know, there's been a disenfranchisement going on for years. It didn't just start under the president. And unemployment for African Americans has always been double that of the majority population. That didn't just happen under this president either.
Yeah.
So if it was 4-5% under Clinton for national, you can best believe we was 8-10%. Always been double. It looks worse now because it's higher now for everybody else. But we've always had a double level of unemployment. So I don't get where all of a sudden we need to be concerned about the unemployment rate in the African American community. We should have always been concerned about the unemployment rate because it's always been doubled. So you have these pockets of people that find these different things to latch on to, when honestly, at the end of the day, these are the same issues. They've been here. I wish we were dealing with something new, but we really not. It's just now more people are affected by it.
Yeah. So getting back to the Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act, as is properly called, there's an incident that happened in Texas where a young spokesman for a group went out and he kind of pulled a hidden camera and asked questions to individuals, and he said he uncovered fraud, right? Uncovering fraud in the way that these services are delivered. What do you think about A, the fact that there was fraud occurring, and then B, the fact that it was uncovered in the manner it was?
Which is fraudulent in itself. But anyway, so two separate issues. A, uncovering fraud as it relates to how people are telling people to go on a website and sign up for whatever they're trying to sign up for as it relates to going through the exchanges, versus the Affordable Care Act itself and the law and what it stands for is two separate entities. One, you got a personnel issue. You're dealing with a person who took it upon themselves to make this decision to try to enroll more people or whatever. I don't know what the person's mindset was. I don't know. Or the people, if it was more than one person. Or the agency, if it was something that was implied by management at this particular agency or not, I don't know. But whatever it was, it is separate from trying to demonize the entire Affordable Care Act, because the law is the law, and the benefits of the law are already in effect and are already working for people who need it to work. The people that are now signing up, and the person that played Inspector Gadget and went undercover and did whatever they had to do to try to expose them, which tells me something about your mindset anyway. What makes you want to go in somewhere undercover and try to expose some dirt on a program that's helping millions of people? What is it in you that told you to go do that? That's what I don't understand. If you want to, if you want to have disagreements on what the law is doing, that's fine. But trying to tear it all down, trying to, as we say, throw the baby out with the bathwater because of one entity here in the state of Texas doesn't mean a whole lot. Because when you go back, it's the same thing they did back in 08 with ALEC or whatever that group was. They tried to say ACORN was registering all these faulty people, and then come to find out that wasn't true, but you completely discredited ACORN. They're no longer around. You created a system now where you disenfranchise more people from voting because of now these new laws that have been put in place by these Republican state houses and Senate houses across the country, where now what you thought was a problem was never a problem, and it's going to be the same thing with health care. So a website glitch is a website glitch. Site malfunctioning is a website malfunctioning. The benefit of being able to even have an opportunity to afford health care. You've got people that have never even had an opportunity. I talked about when I ran a facility, and these people work full-time in our janitorial and housekeeping staff and even food service staff, and yet, as insurance premiums continue to rise, and this was back when Colorado in 1998 and left in 2005, and insurance premiums rose every year for us. And we were state employees, and you know how many state employees there are. There's a lot of us. And yet our premiums were still going up every year to the point where those people that were making the least couldn't even afford it. And they working full time, where they had to get second jobs just to be able to afford what the insurance premium was. So here we are now at a time in history where those types of people can now have an opportunity to afford health care. And you want to come talk about some people that's signing up people and convincing them to lie on the website? I really don't even understand it. I don't know, and I purposely didn't research it because I really don't care, because I'm talking about the benefits of the law. And I stand by my word. I stand by my word that I know my brother's life would have been a lot more bearable had he had access to health care before he died last November. I know that for a fact. Had he had health care, the life he lived on this side would have been a little bit more bearable. Had he lived just one more year, he would have been able to be one of these benefiting right now had he lived one more year. Y'all want to hear about it in terms of whether or not it's good or bad, because it's personal to me. It's personal. And there's nothing you can say to me about what you uncovered in your expose that will convince me that this law does not have benefit. Nothing. And that I stand by.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Bloom.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook. Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. Israel is criticizing the interim deal with Iran that lifts some economic sanctions in return for limits on Tehran's nuclear program. NPR's Emily Harris reports Israeli officials believe the agreement does nothing to keep Iran from pursuing a bomb.
The deal with Iran is unprecedented, says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but not in a good way. What was achieved last night in Geneva is not a historic agreement, Netanyahu told his cabinet Sunday morning. It's a historic mistake. Other cabinet members echoed the prime minister, saying that even if Iran complies with the terms of this deal, it will still have the technical capabilities to develop a nuclear bomb. Israel had lobbied hard for an agreement more to its liking. One official said what came out of Geneva improved along the way, but not enough. Prime Minister Netanyahu reiterated Sunday that Israel will not allow Iran to develop a military nuclear capability. Emily Harris, NPR News, Jerusalem.
Egypt's interim president is banning public gatherings of more than 10 people without prior approval. Violators face hefty fines and prison. President Adli Mansour signed the law today as thousands of protesters were gathered in Cairo's streets. Afghan President Hamid Karzai now says he will not sign a security agreement with the U.S. until there's peace in Afghanistan. NPR's Sean Carberry reports Karzai issued his latest position while addressing the closing session of the Loya Jirga, or Grand Assembly, in Kabul.
The Loya Jirga that Karzai convened to debate the proposed security agreement overwhelmingly approved the deal that will allow thousands of U.S. troops to remain in Afghanistan after 2014, and they called on the president to sign as soon as possible. Karzai said several days ago he would not sign until after the presidential election next spring, but his latest statements create even more uncertainty. Karzai claims that if the U.S. is sincere and brings peace to Afghanistan, he will sign the security agreement. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul says it is still studying Karzai's latest speech and says the deal should be signed quickly. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
A massive storm system that started in California last week with heavy rains and high winds is slowly but steadily heading east. It's already blamed for at least 8 deaths. Today, it's bringing a mix of wintry weather to Texas. Patrick Burke of the National Weather Service says it's disrupting life in much of southern Texas.
As you go deeper into Texas, there's been more of the freezing rain and sleet causing accidents and bringing down power lines into central and west central Texas.
New Mexico and Oklahoma are under winter storm warnings and advisories, as well as snow. The National Weather Service is warning the storm system could disrupt Thanksgiving holiday travel. This is NPR. In Switzerland, voters today rejected a proposal to cap executive pay. The proposal would have limited the earnings of companies' highest paid managers to no more than 12 times the earnings of their lowest paid workers. The proposal went down in today's referendum 66-35% and in all of the country's states. Swiss initiatives need both a majority of voters and states to pass. International relief efforts continue in the Philippines more than 2 weeks after Typhoon Haiyan. Most of the hard-hit areas remain in ruins and without electricity. But as NPR's Frank Langfitt reports from Tacloban, some people are beginning to go back to work.
Rinaldo Espinila headed out for his third day of fishing in a borrowed boat. Typhoon Haiyan had washed his out to sea. In the last couple of days, Espinila made $70 selling his catch, a lot of money for a fisherman here.
There's a lot of fish right now. If people hadn't died in the storm, the fisher folk would be so happy right now because there's so much fish.
Trucks continue to distribute food, water, and tents along the coast today. But like many, Espinila points out that aid from the Philippine government and foreign non-governmental organizations will not last forever. And it's time for people to try to get back to making a living on their own. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Tacloban.
Indonesian authorities raised the alert status for one of the country's most active volcanoes to the highest level today after the mountain repeatedly sent hot clouds of gas down its slope following a series of eruptions in recent days. Mount Sinabung in North Sumatra province unleashed fresh volcanic ash and gravel as much as 16,000 feet high. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We were talking about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and we were discussing the differences between the website versus the actual law itself, right? So many people are getting wrapped around the website or even the registration process and not really making the connection that these two things are different. Separate and apart. Now, there is some validity to the fact that the way the rollout has stuttered because of how people were actually trying to get people to sign up, some of the fraud that was detected in Texas, things of this nature. But for the most part, you're going to have people whenever you have people involved in the process, there's always going to be some issues that go along. But it doesn't discount nor does it discredit the law itself. And so the segment is really to make the distinction, to kind of get people to really understand that there are two separate things, the law and then how people are going about registering with, via the website or the sting operation that people are quote-unquote uncovering, which has nothing to do with the law itself. I gave some facts earlier, and there are others that I want to mention here. More than 500,000 young African-American adults between the ages of 19 and 25 who were otherwise have been uninsured, including 230,000 African-American women, now have coverage. About 10.4 million African-Americans, including 3.9 million adult African-American women, no longer have lifetime limits on their health insurance plans. Major federal investments to improve quality of care. The healthcare workforce will be more diverse due to near tripling of the National Healthcare Services Corporations. Investments in data collection and research will help us better understand the causes of healthcare disparities and develop effective programs to eliminate them. Increased funding available to more than 1,000 community health centers will increase the number of patients served. One of every five patients at a health center is African American. So there's obviously some benefits to this, and that's why it is important for us to emphasize when we get the chance to talk about the law as opposed to the website. And I want to continue to make that distinction whenever I come across people and they talk about these two different things, and to really separate them, because the intent is to get more people insured, get more people to get to these preventive care services, and to really understand what the law is providing and not necessarily the website. Jimmy, you have anything you want to add before we shift to our next segment?
My final comment would be that if these states where the Republican governors declined the Medicaid expansion part of the Affordable Care Act had agreed to do that, then the state would be running their own website, not the federal government. So it's almost as if it was intentional in that, knowing we all know how government works anyway, but the states would have had a better handle. You look at the states that do have the Medicaid expansion. The one that popped out, I believe, is Kentucky or West Virginia, one of those two. And they have seen their coverage base expand, and they haven't had nearly the amount of problems that the federal website has, because they were able, you know, to contain it to their states or whatever. So therein, too, is another issue where you have the state of Texas, which I believe, according to reports, has the most uninsured people in the country, and yet with that leaves so many millions uninsured by not taking the money from the federal government. Now, this is what's funny, because the federal government was paying the state at 100% the first 3 years. So the state wasn't going to be out of any money, wasn't going to have to do anything, but just accept the expansion and insure those extra people in their state that would qualify for Medicaid for nothing.
Yeah.
And these are people that's so fiscally responsible. And you're getting this for free. You're not paying for nothing for 3 years, and then after the first 3 years, I think they only paid like 93. The government still paid like 93 or 95% of it. So you were still not paying that much. And by that time, you'd have that many more people in it. So, you know, you'd have that many more people paying. So, you know, it's just one big, I don't understand it. It's a big bubble is what it is. And so I just hope that people go out and do their own research. And if you need help, they have tons of ways for you to get the information, not just on healthcare.gov. But by going there, they have phone numbers. If you are in person, there's places around that you can go. So just do not be distracted by what the media is saying. If you don't have health care and you can't afford it, and the subsidies that you will be afforded based on your income, take full advantage of all of it.
Yes, indeed.
Something is better than nothing.
Yes, indeed. So I want to shift focus now, and this may have a lot to do while we're seeing some of the things we're doing, seeing out of our congressmen. You know, I think a lot of them are on drugs, if you ask me. So I want to shift to this segment I call Crack is Whack. there's two people that kind of perplex me over the last couple of months is because they've been either allegedly possessing cocaine or has some involvement with crack or crack cocaine or something along those lines. And so it was kind of crazy to me when I saw that Trey Riddell cocaine possession allegations, this story in the Washington Post. Now, according to the court charging documents, on the 29th, Riddell was unlawfully, knowingly, and intentionally possessed a quantity of cocaine. The charges are as a result of a D.C. Superior Court grand jury indictment. Riddell was charged Tuesday and will be arraigned Wednesday, and he faces a maximum of only 180 days in jail, and a $1,000 fine. In a statement, he said, problems in alcohol led to an extremely irresponsible choice, and said he will seek treatment. Now, this other elected official, the mayor, Toronto Mayor Rob Ford, said Tuesday he smoked crack. About a year ago, when he was in a drunken stupor, an admission that follows months of accusations during which he refused to step down. The allegation that he had been caught on video smoking crack surfaced in May, and Ford initially insisted that the video didn't exist and sidestepped questions about whether he had ever smoked crack, but he was forced to backtrack after police said last week that he obtained a copy of the video, which has not been released publicly. Yes, he smoked crack. Cocaine, he told reporters. Jimmy, what is going on with these elected officials smoking crack?
Well, I'm trying to figure out why the representative from Florida hasn't been asked to resign yet, because actually what he did was illegal. He was in possession of an illegal substance, and all Anthony Weiner did was take pictures of himself, and they was on him to resign in 2.5 seconds. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, why these two things aren't adding up for me. And people, and this is the same congressman, if my memory serves me correct, that had wanted people who were receiving public assistance to be tested for drugs. He was one of the ones that voted for such a law to happen. So he voted for something that he himself couldn't pass. He couldn't pass the drug test, but he wanted everybody else to be able to pass the drug test before they can get some assistance. But he can't pass the drug test because you don't start out with cocaine. You graduate to cocaine. I'm thinking, I don't know. If you started cocaine, you a bad somebody. So however he got to cocaine, he started somewhere else before that. So that means he's been having some illegal substances in his body for a while, and had they drug tested him before he ran for election, he probably wouldn't even made it. So I mean, you know, I think that's something we need to consider. You want to drug test everybody else, I think your elected officials need to go get some drug tests, because y'all getting the biggest subsidies in the world.
Yeah, so what you're referring to is...
You got free health care, free benefits, you get to ride around for free, and, you know, all you got to serve is one term, and I, as a taxpayer, are paying for your health care for the rest of your life. You're not just you, but your family.
Yeah, that's a problem. So what you're referring to is a story... that we kind of reported on about a year ago or so ago about the fact that they were asking to drug test people in a certain district area because before they got their benefits, right? So there's an article in the Washington Post if people want to go out there and take a look at the specifics, but it says that Riddell, the Florida Republican whose campaign was heavy on balancing the budget, would be the first to save the government some money on the plan. The 37-year-old congressman, who describes himself on Twitter as a hip-hop conservative, whatever that is, lasted just 10 months in the nation's capitals before his No Snow Rewards card balance tripped the radar of law enforcement. He was busted last month for after buying $250 worth of cocaine from a federal agent, and it apparently wasn't the first time on his particular sleigh ride. Radell was described in charging documents as a routine buyer in Dubon circles, purchasing for himself and for his pals. He pleaded guilty in D.C. Superior Court this week, was sentenced to a year of probation, and announced a leave of absence.
Yeah, and he should be asked to resign from his position.
Yes. Yes.
He's unstable.
Yes. Yes. You know, he said he'd bring American values to Washington, values that come with integrity, especially when we talk about cuts, like the kind you make with the razor blade, hip-hop man. Seriously, this is a guy who preaches about the dysfunction in Washington and then looks at what he does when he gets out of town. The Tea Party darling is one of the Republicans who voted in favor of devastating $39 billion cut in the nation's food stamp program and later voted for another bill requiring mandatory drug testing for food stamp recipients. Again, here's the guy. The Tea Party darling is one of the Republicans who voted in favor of devastating $39 billion cut to the nation's food stamp program and later voted for another bill requiring mandatory drug testing for food stamp recipients. This is crazy. I mean, you know, and again, the hypocrisy coming out of Washington. This is not the first time things like this happen, you know. And so it doesn't surprise me when you see the craziness going on in Washington, because you got people there on drugs, obviously.
Obviously.
You know?
That
so
are,
when people
that
joke
are
about it, they're really on drugs.
Of,
right.
Right. That are living in some sort of alternative universe that, you know, the majority of us would not be privy to. So you're probably right. It's probably more of them on some sort of substance, illegal substance, at that, than what we care to believe. Not are just the plain old alcoholic, you know, because it's a few of them. I think they wake up with something to drink, you know, and that can alter your mind as well. So I say they need to be tested for alcohol and drugs at the start of every session. At the start, they go to the House and vote on something. We need to know which mind you voting with, your regular mind or your mind that's been altered. I think we should know that. And, I mean, we already not getting nothing done, so it wouldn't stop nothing.
I definitely agree. This is definitely a shout-out to Toronto Mayor Rob Ford and your boy Trey Rydell, the hip-hop congressman. I guess you know what this is all about, don't you? We're going to take another break. We'll be back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And I'm joined by my lovely wife, Jima. Jima is the executive producer of Current Events as well as the chief operating officer for Cook Enterprises. Jima, how are we doing so far?
Doing good.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So I want to shift now to entertainment for a minute or two. And I want to talk a little bit about this TV series called Scandal. Now, for those of you that don't know, Scandal is a political thriller television series created by Shonda Rhimes, starring Kerry Washington. It debuted on ABC about a year ago, a year and a half ago, I want to say. And it features this character called Olivia Pope. And it's partially based on George H.W. Bush's administration. There's a press aide, namely Judy Smith, who served as the co-executive producer on the show. And it takes place in Washington, D.C., and it's very, very good. I must say so myself. So that's kind of a little backstory. But this is the third season, I want to say, and it is a mind-blowing series. This last week was very interesting because they really reintroduced Kerry Washington's character, Olivia Pope, and they started to begin to open up her background, who she is, who she was, her parents, things of that nature. Now, so, Jima, I want to ask this question. Regarding Olivia Pope's, at least the character Olivia Pope. The fact that her father is very involved
crazy.
I want to say crazy because he's really doing a job, right? He's been assigned this role that many people would have trouble taking on, but he's command, right? So she has a father that's command, and her mom, we have yet to figure out what her real role was, but I think she was probably a double agent at some point. But she's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so one can infer that Olivia Pope must be crazy, right? I mean, at some point, this has to come out. What do you think?
Well, we've already seen a side of Olivia Pope's craziness in terms of her level of emotion for the married man that she continues to have the affair with in spite of all that it could cost her and him. So that in itself lets you know she's a little bit off kilter a tad. And then to look at her family background, her DNA, she can't help but be a little off considering who her father is, and as you stated, learning more about her mother, but we know enough about her mother to know she's a tad bit touched, but determined, because there's no way somebody is still alive after 20 years of being in a hole somewhere, being moved around probably year to year, or every so many years they probably move her because they figure she'll figure out how to get out of somewhere. Olivia's determination that she has sometimes, you see where that comes from, her desire to stick to it until the job is done. You see where she gets that from. And then, as I said, that borderline kind of psychoticness, you see where she gets that from. So it's interesting to watch it unfold. I mean, it's deep. You know, everything is attached to some other issue, and that's the one thing we fail to remember or fail to accept, that even the decisions she's making now in her own life are still connected to whatever daddy issue she has and whatever mama issue she has.
So let's talk about this whole psychotic thinking component of the show, specifically around Quinn's character and Hook's character, right? So Quinn has been longing to get involved into this to this dark world that Hook is in, or Hook was in. He tried to kind of tread waters, gets in and out. She gets in now. Now she is in a position where she's compromised. What do you think Hook is going to do to her based on what we've seen last week?
Well, it's a great teaser for them to have him show his tools, because she knows what he's capable of doing with those tools, and he's allowed her to use them as well, so she knows what those tools can do. So she knows she's in for it. You're either going to go on and tell him what he knows, or you're going to be tortured until the bitter end, until he gets he's going to get it out of her. So just go on and tell him. He ain't going to kill her, because then to kill her, he would have to tell everybody else what happened. So he's going to try to do everything he can to protect Olivia and protect the firm. So I'm thinking, you know, she should just be wise and go ahead on and fess up and let Huck do what Huck does, which is backdoor stuff, and feed. And maybe they just start feeding her false information. But, you know, with the mama escaping and standing there in front of Olivia's door and all this kind of stuff, it's game on. You know, I think the button has been pushed and there's no stopping it. So this, however these chips going to fall, they're going to fall. And I don't know who ain't going to get hit. I think everybody might take a bullet on this one. I don't know.
Yeah, when you look at the fact that B613 has the backing of command and all the support and money he has behind him, and then you look at, you know, Hulk and at least the Gladiators, and, you know, they're not as connected, but they are connected. Then it could go either way, right? I mean, you talked about the tease of having the tools out and Quinn understanding the impact of what they can do, and then Hulk, of course, he's been doing it for a long time, and so it'll be interesting to know, because Quinn has compromised the team, right?
Yeah.
Being a Gladiator, that's something that you don't do, and she crossed the line in a lot of different ways. Now, I must say, it was unknowingly at first. But because of her curiosity kills a cat, as people say, her curiosity has led her down this path. And so, you know, Huck has said many times, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. But now she's in it. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they go ahead and got rid of her. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, here's my thing. I'm not going to give her a pass on being naive, though, because she knew exactly what she was doing when she started doing things and not telling people about them. When she started showing up late because she had the gun range but didn't want anybody to know she was there. So whatever she started doing that she was being secretive about opened the door for Charlie to step in and do what he did. So it all goes back to whatever you're doing. Once you start compromising yourself and not wanting to be upfront, not even with herself about what was going on, then she allowed Charlie to step in, because anytime somebody tell you, and you know, and it'd be different if she didn't know Charlie, but she knows Charlie, and she knows what Charlie is capable of. They've had run-ins with Charlie. They've done some quote-unquote work with Charlie, so she knows what he's about. That's, you you know, that's like looking at a snake saying, don't bite me. Well, it's a snake. And that's what snakes do, depending on the type of snake it is. So I'm not giving her a pass for being naive. She walked right. She opened that door. She walked right in, and she let Charlie follow her right on in, and she is where she's supposed to be. If Huck decides to knock her on off, I'm cool with that because she ain't got on my nerves anyway. We're trying to be Huck. The world needs one Huck. You know, we don't need a whole
lot of Only one. Only one. You're right.
Right. We don't need a lot of little baby Hucks running around here trying to, you know, take out the world and stuff. We need one. We got one, and he's done his job well for Olivia. So, you know, I understand she got some issues with how she got to be a part of the team and how they set her up. And I get all that. But they got you out of all that. You should let that go. And if you couldn't let it go, you should have walked away. But now you compromised everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of snakes, Cyrus is a snake.
Ooh, Cyrus is low down.
He is a snake. I understand. I mean, you know, we talk about, a while ago about the president needs a person that's going to, you know, stir up stuff for him, you know, because the president doesn't need to be the one out there in front always, you know, defending this and trying to advocate for this. He needs that German Shepherd or that pit bull beside him. Does Cyrus fit that description of the pit bull?
Yeah. To the 12th degree, he fixed it. but Cyrus is the kind of pit bull you can't even trust your own pit bull though with Cyrus, because
yeah, you don't know what
he's real sure. Yeah, Cyrus is all about Cyrus.
And snake.
He really doesn't have any loyalty to no one but himself. I mean, he doesn't have any loyalty to his partner. I mean, he set his partner up to go out and seduce somebody. I mean, that is low. I mean, that's just low. And now he got to sit there and look at the pictures of his wife for, you know, all practical purposes that you just set up on this date, and you got to look at him having sex with another man. How in the world?
Yeah.
But you know, he pulled the strings on that, so now you got to deal with it. But no, we don't need but one of them either.
Now, we're going to shift here in a minute, but the last one I want to talk about is Amy Young, Melly's character, the first lady in the story, just married to Grant, which is the president. And I'm not real sure where, especially based on the last episode, how involved she's going to be going forward. You know, for a long time there, she was, you know, because she's been on this roller coaster ride. Some days Fitz is on her side. Some days he's not. He keeps going back to Olivia Pope. He's defending her. So she's on this roller coaster ride. How long do you think she's going to stand for this behavior before she really blows up?
Well, you got to remember, she is as in love with her position of power as the president is with his. So she will endure it all until she doesn't think they may win. Now, if it gets to a point in the election cycle where she doesn't feel as though they're going to win the election and her power is going to be taken away from her anyway, all bets are off. But as long as there's a chance that she has an opportunity to be in that White House and be in the White House in that capacity that she's in it, she's going to do whatever she can to stay there, period. She's going to do whatever she can to stay there. And she's going to suck it up and act like all is well, which I don't know if I could do all that because, you know, that's just too much. I mean, I don't understand. That's going way too. I mean, I love you and everything, but, I can't be that chick that's just sitting in the room and your mistress is right across the table, and I know she's your mistress. And everybody in the world knows. She, you know, everybody knows. Everybody knows now. Everybody. They play like they don't know, but more people in the White House, Secret Service people know, everybody know. And then everybody knows that you know.
Yeah, that's the word.
So
that's the hard
one thing. Right. It's one thing for everybody to know, and they know you don't know, so they can kind of whatever. But they now know that you know. It's talking about you like you crazy. So,
I understand Millie's position. What about Fitz, though? Fitz has some culpability in this, right? I mean, why would he keep treating her in this fashion? and especially in the White, coming out of the White House, because the vice president is right on his heels.
Well, but you got to remember, though, that vice president, she thinks she won, but that was all set up by Cyrus, too, with the preacher dude. Remember that episode where she was convincing them? So where she off doing, they set her up to go off and do that. So then they can find something for the husband, which then could discredit her, and she's going to drop out. So that's the, all of this is part of Cyrus's master plan. And then the other lady that ends up dropping out. So Fitz is not going to have a problem with women because he's going to discredit all of them some kind of way or make them all drop out of the race. So he's, you know, he's got to have a strong male contender that he's going to have to contend with. And then that's where you get the real deal Holyfield at right there. So Fitz is a man in love with another woman. And he's been in love with another woman for a long time. I'm going to say it's love. I don't necessarily know that it is because I would think if you really love somebody, you would treat them a little better. Your language towards them would be a little bit better. You wouldn't be so nasty towards them. And, you know, Fitz walks around like everybody else did something wrong, but you killed somebody, Fitz, and we all know that you killed the judge.
I think he did a couple. He didn't kill a lot of people. That
plane? You know. Well, that's if he really shot the plane down. See, I'm suspect now as to whether or not he did or didn't, or if there was some bomb on the plane that went off that was set by the double agent mom. So, you know, we just never, you know, that's what, but they had to say it was shot down to cover up the fact that somebody got on there with the bomb and left it. You know what I mean? Because, you know, all
right,
of
right.
that. So it's, but I agree. Fitz is, you know, has some culpability in his relationship. Because if you chose to stay with her, then you need to stay with her. And most of the time, that's what that means is that I'm going to stay and I'm going to stop messing around. But, you know, that didn't last. And who knows? Olivia might come up pregnant after this last incident. She's pregnant in real life anyway. So they may try to write that into the script. Now, that would be a trip.
That would be a trip. Yes,
I mean,
indeed.
That would be a holy trip. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I want to kind of move now to another thing that's in entertainment. I really don't want to give away Best Man Holiday because it was such a good movie that I think that everybody in the world should go see it because it really dealt with, you know, current issues in our society today as opposed to where they were when it first one came out. So it's an absolutely good movie. But before we do that, because I don't want to give it too much away, I want to talk a little bit about Oprah's interview with Spike Lee and Reverend Al. They were so amazing, and Oprah always does her thing, right? I mean, you can always count on her to be consistent in her delivery, in her questioning, in her depth of understanding of an individual. So she's always going to give you that. But what I was surprised about, especially with Spike's interview and Reverend Al's interview, is the level at which they went to kind of reveal themselves and to kind of let their guard down, if you will, to kind of talk about it. So let's start first with Spike Lee. What did you two questions. The first one, what was the main takeaway for you with the Spike Lee Oprah interview?
Well, I think the fact that I'm happy that he and Tyler have talked and that I'm hopeful that they both recognize that there's room for both of them and that one talent does not diminish the other. And I believe in his roundabout way he said that. So I'm grateful for that because we don't need another East Coast, West Coast rivalry where, you know, we can't seem to get along. When both of y'all making money hand over fist, so what difference does it? I mean, you know, I just couldn't understand what the beef was. So I'm glad that that's settled and that they had the talk that the two men needed to have, recognizing that they have two separate audiences, most of it. You know, they have a different type of movie goer. I like both of them. So, you know, I mean, even the new movie that Spike has coming out, I'm probably only going to go see it because Spike Lee directed it. Because it doesn't look like my type of movie. It's more your type of movie because it's dark. But I'm gonna go.
What are you saying about me?
Oh, nothing. That you like those type of movies. That's all.
Whatever.
But so that was one thing I got from Spike, and that he is just as he has wisened up as he's gotten older, just like he stated, you really can't talk about everything. You can't have a comment for everything that's out there, because then you just become another part of the story. So you speak out. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what were you most impressed by with Spike Lee with the interview?
What do you mean by that?
So what stood out for you regarding Spike Lee? You talked about what was your main takeaway, the main takeaway being that this conversation happened between Spike and Tyler Perry. But what were you most impressed? What surprised you about Spike during the interview?
I don't necessarily know if I was surprised as much as I was relieved that he recognizes that even in his position that he still has room to grow. And so he has not given up the learning of his craft. And so because of that, he stretches himself. And so I that he's just not going to stay one type of way. I mean, Spike does all kind of movies that, for the most part, you're like, Spike Lee did that? And then he's like, dang, Spike did that? So you see him still trying to grow and press the envelope. But he recognizes that, you know, that the glass ceiling, so to speak, in Hollywood is still there. I mean, he's not blinded by his success to say, oh, it's, you know, Hollywood has you know, turned the corner. He recognizes that it's still what it is.
So let's shift to Al now for a second, Reverend Al Sharpton. Same question. What was your main takeaway from the interview with Oprah?
Well, I like the fact that Reverend Al is consistent. And by that I mean when he tells a story and you hear the story again, you will hear it the exact same way. Not because it's rehearsed, but because it's the truth. He doesn't add anything or take anything away from it. But if you ask another probing question, you'll get a little bit more information. So I felt like he was very open, as you stated earlier, very vulnerable. He didn't try to hide anything. I mean, I have the book, The Rejected Stone. I haven't started reading it yet. That's on my to-do list this week before I start back to school. It's to read it. And he talks about that book and the different things that happened and in his life, which the average person probably would have been crazy to have lived through something like that. So the fact that you know, you recognize the passion, but it was good to hear him talk about the anger that he carried with him all those years, and he finally realized who and what he was angry about. And if there's a lesson to be learned from his book and from his life, I think that's the lesson that the anger that we have, we first got to recognize that we're angry and then say, okay, now what is it that I'm mad about and who is it that I'm mad with? Because a lot of times we go through life masking the anger and trying to do all these other things when at the end of the day we are mad, we're hurt, we're sad, we're wounded. A lot of us are wounded, but we've never even acknowledged that we've been cut. So, or that we, you know, that we've been hurt, or that we have something stirring us up on the inside. So for me, and there's no secret that I'm a fan of Reverend Al. I try to watch him on anything that he's on because, as I state, he's consistent, and if he tells a story one way, you will hear that same story. And I think not because it's rehearsed, but because it's the truth. If I ask you, you know, where were we when we met, you'll be able to tell me where we were when we met. And if somebody else asks you, where did you meet Jima? You'll be able to tell it's the same story. And that story is not going to change. And so you might hear it 1,200 times, but every time you know how we met.
That's right. I know you cooked that big meal for me on Christmas and let it be known that happened. So what were you most surprised with?
That he
what
cried.
Impressed you the most? Okay.
That he cried. But I've seen it coming because
Right.
Because what he was talking about was so personal and so real, talking about the love he had and the adoration he had for his mother and how he could not dishonor her by, you know, referring to her in any derogatory terms. So I just felt that. And what's interesting is he said that statement before, but I think there was something else that Oprah asked him that had not been asked of him before that allowed him to go just another layer deeper. And that's where you got the raw emotion and the I said I wasn't going to cry on Oprah, you know, type thing. So, yeah, that he allowed himself to just stay in the moment and not try to, you know, move himself out of that place, that he just stayed there. I thought that was very admirable.
Okay. Well, we're closing in on the last 5 or so minutes of the show, and I wanted to just take a moment to reflect, at least allow you a moment to reflect over the last several weeks and months, and kind of talk about that, and then we'll close the show. Any last minute thoughts or reflections?
Well, as you stated, there's been a lot that has happened over the course of time. And as we enter into another holiday season, those of us that have experienced any sort of loss of life, this is a difficult time. And so my challenge to us is that we find someone to talk to. Not that they will absolve the pain away or not that they will make the person return, but just give you a person to just talk to, that you find that person and be able to get through this season of Thanksgiving. And as we go into it, also recognizing that children will be home, try to have some activities for them that will still be mind-stimulating, as well as fun and active. We want to keep them active and exercising, and that we do everything in moderation. You know, it's not a time to overindulge, whether it's too much drinking, too much eating, too much partying, too much laying around, because you can do too much of nothing too. It's not a time to overdo it. It's a time to be in moderation and to just enjoy it. But don't allow it to consume you. And if you're in a place where you don't feel like that, then I think as you grow and you develop and you figure out who you are, everybody goes through life in different paces, and we have different things we look forward to. And as we go into the new year, and I start back to class on December 7th. So, you know, that's going to be, you know, something else, and you'll still be doing what you do with your doctoral program. We have a lot to be concerned about, and we have a lot to look forward to, and we have a lot to hold on to in this moment and in this time. So as heavy as my heart is right now, I do trust and believe that God will eventually ease the burden that I carry today. But I pray that as each day goes on, that the load gets a little bit lighter. But I'm not going to rush it, you know. I'm not going to rush through this grieving period, because I don't think I should have to. And so I'm going to take the time I need to reflect and take the time I need to grieve and working. And I just pray that those that have experienced any loss, and loss comes in many forms, that you take the time and take the steps to take care of yourself. But I'm definitely glad that we're back on the air. This was fun. This was invigorating. This was exciting. And I hope that someone out there in internet land, radio land, heard something that may spark them to go do their own research. And next week when we come back, you'll have a question or two for myself and for Patrick. So those are my closing thoughts.
All righty then. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer, Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.